The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
God f***ing damn it!
What? That's good, right?
No. I only bet 10.
But you won.
What did I say? What did I tell you? It's a short thing.
You talk about this crap like it's science, Tony.
I lost a lot of f***ing money.
You didn't lose.
We could have turned your bullshit into a f***ing $1 million.
My bullshit?
You ever think I might know what I'm doing?
I'll just call myself Mr. X. Yep, you can't go wrong with Mr. X.
Of his demise have been, as the saying goes, greatly exaggerated. He is alive and thriving on not one, but two boats in the great state of Maine this summer. He is Mr. X. How has your New England summer been, my friend?
Up and down. Up and down.
We know you lost your father this summer. That's awfully tough. Of us that are in that club already. I don't think I've ever heard lore of your dad and you growing up. Was your dad a big sports fan?
He became one out of, as most old guys, of course, he played a little bit in small town, but wasn't really. But, of course, became one when I was a kid because that's what dads do. And he coached everyone in the neighborhood and, you know, didn't know shit, but it didn't matter because they all liked him.
And what did young Mr. X play as far as a kid in sports? Did you play everything?
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't believe it, but actually my sport was soccer, which I abhor. But I played
I
them all
now.
Yeah, but played baseball, basketball, and soccer.
Okay. By the way, you're also pretty big dude. How tall are you?
6'3".
And what were you once you got to high school? Were you like 6'3" when you got to high school?
No, I was a very late grower. I started college at like 5'11", about 140 if it was raining.
Okay.
But I graduated college at 6'3", 200. It was
So your dad was a sports fan only because you played sports and he coached you just enough to get you through it. Did you ever watch sports with your dad?
Oh yeah. We went to all the Redskin games, had the season tickets in RFK. Yep. And I don't know why he would take me and not his buddies, but he would.
Did you have to fight with your brothers or sisters for the tickets?
No, I only had two older sisters, so they weren't really as big a deal.
Okay. You know? All right.
No, good. Me. Just spoiling me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know that you, as a dad to your four sons, are going to leave a huge imprint through the years because of all the sports watching and the gambling advice that they may or may not adhere to.
Rarely. Rarely. I want to digress back there for a second. I'm not going to do the glory days. I was great. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to do that. But a year and a half ago, my travel soccer coach was inducted into the Virginia Sports Hall of Fame.
Really?
Long since dead, but his son reached out to a few of us, told us this was happening. So about four or five of us got together and went down to Fredericksburg, Virginia, just, you know, old time's sake. Now, we played travel back when travel meant travel. Now it just means, you know, there's a zillion teams. We played it because there was no one local that could compete with us. So we play up and down the East Coast, Miami to Toronto, every year. And at the Hall of Fame thing, when they were reading his intro, they said how we'd lost 9 games in 10 years or 10 games in 9 years. I forget which. It really was a loaded team. And the funny part was for that ceremony, I dug through the boxes and found the picture of us in year one when we were, I think, 10. and brought it for the guys. Now, Mrs. X, being an educator learner, she's looking through the pictures. There's only 12 of us on the team. And she's, you know, she's at, and I'm looking at them. I'm remembering the names. And she's Googling the guys like one by one. Let's just say they all, the first five or six she pulls up, they're all like college Hall of Fames. And, you know, they all went on to just these great careers. One was in the NFL. And by the time we get to the sixth guy, she just looks at me and goes, "What the hell happened to you?"
Oh, God. That is a dagger from your wife.
She's not wrong. I peaked around 14, maybe. And
that is
so funny. But there was a loaded team that was a lot of fun. We went, traveled everywhere. Now, you know, when I was coaching X3 and 4 in travel ball in Northern Virginia, and everybody wants to play on these travel teams and go to the beach and do all these tournaments and spend all this money. And I'm like, we can't beat the local cities. Where are we going? You know, you should travel because you need to, not just because you want to spend money.
You guys were like a barnstorming team. You're like, we'll take in on anybody. Let's go. Who wants
Pretty
to
close.
Take us on?
That's... Back then it was, yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess I need to issue a retroactive apology when I used to mock you for your claim you could make a 50-yard field goal. See, I kind of forget the fact that before you became what now looks like a giant Maine mountain man, just a big old oaf with suspenders and a hatchet under your arm, that you were a young, lithe, 5'11 soccer player and could probably womp the ball pretty good. So you said you could kick 50-yarders in college at UVA.
We used to go over to the practice field and kick for fun. And I could, 50 was the max for me. I couldn't hit beyond.
Well, that sounds utterly reasonable.
And right no pass rush, no line, no hut. That stuff makes a difference.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'd love to see a picture of young Mr. X in his spry prime.
You would think that, wouldn't you?
Well, I too, like Mrs. X, be saddened at the demise since then?
More than likely.
Oh, God, come on. I'm a dude, man. I'm a guy. I'll understand. Brotherhood, man. I'll support you. I just want to see a young Mr. X. So why is it that you hate soccer, and did you not watch any of the World Cup? Did you bet any of the World Cup?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
When my kids came along, I think like they each played, the typical year or two of soccer. It was probably the only thing I didn't coach them in. I don't know. I just found it, it was too boring. There was nowhere to go after high school. What, are you going to go play for some rinky-dink small college? No, I wanted to go to Virginia. I wanted to go to a good school. I don't know. It's just, it's not like they were going to be groomed to be in the NBA or the MLB, for God's sakes, but there's just something about the dead end coming in soccer that makes it a downer. There's no one to watch. You know, what are they going to, they like to watch Kobe and they like to watch Bryce Harper. What are you going to do? Go play soccer? Who are you going to watch?
Well, that's an argument I make as well to guys that have kids. I'm like, they're like, what are they playing? I'm like, soccer. I'm like, where's that going? So at least if they play baseball or even basketball, white kids in the burbs and basketball, you can shoot really, really well. You can make it to the league. You know, there's always a room for a shooter in the NBA. And, baseball is pretty meritocratic because you don't have to be a huge freak. You can be a tiny guy. I mean, look at Altuve and others. Yeah. And small, good players come in small packages. So, there's that if you're athletic. But I thought the World Cup was really exciting. A number of matches. Great. I watched a whole lot of it. But by the time it got to the final, I was reminded again, viscerally, of why I don't invest in the sport. The final was a pile of dog shit. It was not only boring with no scoring, but it was replete with the same kind of nonsense that is absolutely intolerable to the North American sports fan, which is the quixotic red cards, having to play an entire game basically one man down because of one brief, fleeting little foul that happened, which it was a bad foul. I'm not saying it wasn't a red card, but none of it seems to match up to what the American sports sensibilities are as to what are the correct punishments for bad acts in a sporting event.
Yeah, I would say, I go many years without following it in between, but they have kind of turned it from an intent into any little slip up is over penalized, call it safety or whatever. Sure. But it used to be, oops, my bad, was not a red card. It was a warn. Now it's like they were a little quick with them. But I think the reason it's fun, let's just hit it on the head here. What's fun, the way countries get together and have their chance, and what was it, the way they took over Boston.
Yeah, Scotland took over Boston.
I mean, you can't.
That is great.
That's great.
Right, the international festival aspect of the World Cup is great, and I do love that. But you know, the proper team did win. Spain was way better in the final. And it took a long time for them to finally break ahead and win that game. And that's the thing about soccer. You may be the better team and not win. And, of course, everyone will say, but that's the point of soccer. You don't get it, Zabe. Sometimes the better team doesn't win, and that's okay.
And that happens almost every day in baseball.
Well, yeah. Yes, you could say that as well. So why don't we pick up on baseball? You have been, for the longest time, a Red Sox fan. And I'm just wondering, have you ever in your life seen a season turnaround quite like this?
2003 Florida Marlins pops to mind, but your point is still on target.
Didn't you bet
they fired their manager. What's that?
Didn't you bet that season? I thought you had a leveraged position.
Oh, yeah. That was the
after they brought in trader Jack McKeon.
Yeah, they fired their manager in June.
Jeff Torberg, I believe.
I think you're right. Okay. I know McKeon came in, and yeah, that was when I was on your radio show, and I had announced in June that I had just taken him at 201, and you guys laughed. That was just to win the National League alone, and they did.
There you go.
They won the World Series. Yeah,
Jeff Torberg was fired at 16-22, tied for last place in the NL East, and they bring in 72-year-old cigar chomping Jack McKeon. Almost like just a babysitter. Yeah. You're like, look, we had to fire this asshole. Just make sure the team shows up on time so we don't get fined by the league.
Who's available in mid-season? Yeah, who's available in June? Not a lot of good guys.
Yeah. So anyway, similar to that, the Red Sox were so bad, they fire their manager, they fire the whole coaching staff, and then they go on this incredible tear mid-season, and by the trade deadline, they're buyers.
And then they come out of the break and they go to LA and sweep the Dodgers. It's ridiculous because this team has no talent. It does remind me of the 2014 Red Sox team that was not very good and won the World Series miraculously. It was Ortiz and a bunch of misfits. But I will tell you, Zabe, that it's funny you say that because back around June, around the time they were fired, you know, their infield was so pathetic. They were rolling through guys left and right. And one day the text started, not X1, it was X234 and I. One of them posed the question of, you know, they're just rolling anyone they can out in the infield. And they said, if the four of us played infield, how many outs could we record? To which I immediately called dibs on first base. My number was 8. But that's because I assumed there'd be at least a couple pop-ups here and there. But they thought it would be much less than that, and they're probably right. But the point of it is, that's how bad they were. We were comparing their infield to the four of us going into the infield. And since then, they can't lose.
Well, one of the key guys has been third baseman Caleb Durbin, who they got from the Brewers in the trade that involved Kyle Harrison. Now, early on, it looked like the Brewers had scored because Harrison's been great. Got ripped last night, but Durbin started slow, was hitting .192. He's now up at .321, and he's basically been one of the hottest hitters in baseball since his slow start. So I guess it all goes to prove that baseball remains this wonderful, beautiful mystery where sometimes the sum of the parts is way more than the individual guys on paper.
Sure, and that's a really good point because this team looked so lost ownership wise, because, you know, they had traded away, they signed Devers to a record contract. They basically gave him away for virtually nothing. And the only
bag of shit that didn't want to move positions.
But you know what? There's lots of bag of shits that play well. But, they traded him away, and all they got out of it really was Harrison, who then in the offseason they turned and said, yeah, we don't really want him anyway. So it's like they got, essentially they got Durbin for him.
Yeah.
And yet they still have turned it around, and they're not good, but I've often said lucky beats good. So they're still going to end up playing New York in round one, and that's not a good place
to be.
That'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. And then of course you guys steal, I don't want to say steal, you paid a pretty good price, but you get Adley Rutschman from the Orioles. My Oriole friends are despondent because he really was the heartbeat of their young rebuild that has now been torn apart. How good, like, was that trade with the right price for Rutschman, in your opinion?
They gave up a lot for him. I think the Orioles were, I mean, the Orioles had already decided Rutschman is not who they thought he was. He's been bad for 2.5 years. How long are you going to wait?
Right.
And they got a decent little haul for him. You never used to sit there and trade top players within the division.
Right.
Nobody seems to care anymore. They're making them within the division. How do you do that? Especially a guy like Rutschman, who, even if you've kind of given up on him, you're always afraid you're wrong and you don't want to see him coming in your rival's uniform. But I wasn't, the Sox had no catching. That was their weak spot. And I was shocked that they went for it at the deadline and filled their hole. So, and what they brought his backup along too, just in case. That made no sense.
Rutschman was a .277 hitter with 20 bombs at his peak in 2023, but has been steadily declining and played two partial seasons in Baltimore since, and now he's a Red Sox. So injury prone as well. Well, it's going to be fun, the World Series. It sucks that there is this storm cloud looming over what is almost surely going to be a lockout of some length. The notion of a complete 162 next summer, that ship has sailed. I think the best we can carve out is a chunk. How optimistic and or pessimistic are you about next year?
Well, to be brutally honest, I can't pretend I care like I used to. I know.
Do you know how much summer's gonna suck with no baseball?
I hear you. I'll have to buy a couple more boats or something.
And listen to what on the radio on your boat.
Yeah, that's fair.
MLS soccer, you'll kill yourself. You'll jump in the water and drown.
Yeah. Every now and then you see I've been wrong the last couple of contract expirations, but you look at it and you just get, I guess it's just realistic when I go, they're so far apart. It's not the normal posturing.
Right.
It's time for a major, major overhaul, and that won't come cheap. It will come in the way of a record stoppage. I don't even know if there'll be a season.
A lot of people are saying that that's their prediction, no season.
Yeah, and I know everybody jumps to one side or the other typically, no matter what the issues are, but I'd like to actually look at them. And sometimes go one way, some the other. Maybe you can educate me. I don't, other than posturing and clout, I can't see how the players really think a cap is so catastrophic.
Well, they apparently think it's so catastrophic, that's where they've drawn the line in the sand.
Yeah.
Their word is they're not going to accept a cap anyhow, anyway, end of story. Here's what I find really out of whack with baseball's sort of player pay structure. Forget the amount of money and the fact that, yes, there is a luxury tax, and yes, the Dodgers luxury tax is more than the entire Brewers payroll. Forget that for a second. To me, the fact that young players are utterly crippled for their first, six years? That they could be one of the best pitchers or hitters in baseball for 3 years running and make so little, that's crazy to me. I don't know why the union is not saying, look, if you want a salary cap, we want our guys coming into the league to be able to make money starting with their third year of service. But I guess that's not an issue for the union.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think back to how it got this way, though. I mean, they're tied to the team for 3 years, and all they can do is
arbitration.
Well, they call it arbitration. First three, they don't get that. 4 through 6 is arbitration years before you can become free agent. But similar to the other leagues, like they back up a few years in the NBA, without it, the players' biggest argument is when the new guys make more than the veterans. And for a while there, the NFL was paying, you know, the draft picks more than the 10-year vet. And the players were like, whoa, this is no good. Right. So the only way to balance that was to kind of, let's say, is to kind of do that. So the players as a whole prefer the veterans to make the money and let's call it the new kids to pay their dues before they make it. It didn't get that way just randomly like the owners screwing them. It got that way because the players wanted to tilt the scale to the vets. The way right. The NFL has also successfully done. It used to be, you know, Art Monk as an all-pro would make less than whoever, Desmond Howard, who they draft in round one.
Right.
As I recall.
Yeah. No.
And they're like, this is wrong. Let's fix this.
Right. Especially because the top picks in the NFL were being speculated upon with contracts that were completely out of whack. Yeah. I think the Sam Bradford contract was so egregious and he turned out to be just, whatever as a quarterback, that's what helped break that current structure. But it kills me if I'm an NFL player that I'm forced to sign a 5-year deal as a first rounder or a 4-year deal if I'm a second rounder or longer. Guys like Alfred Morris, a running back who was picked in the 6th round, was super productive for his first 2 years. And a lot of that was the scheme they were running with RG3. But he still couldn't get above $1 million because he was drafted so low and he was under control. And the team knew, we're going to use you up and we're going to throw you away and we're going to get somebody else who can basically do the same thing. It's kind of bullshit, you know?
Yeah, he was sleeping on his friend's couch for those first few years leading the league in rushing. I remember that. He came and spoke at Mrs. X's school. He was a wonderful guy.
Super nice guy. Yeah,
really.
And
good
I know
guy, man.
Nobody's gonna cry about me saying he only made $895,000, but relatively
speaking, that's running backs in the NFL might have the worst deal in sports overall.
Yeah,
because they throw them out so fast.
Right. Also, on the baseball front, are you as amused as I am at the number of times now that home plate umpires are just pretending like they didn't see a guy tap his helmet in a challenge, deny it? And then inevitably what happens next is the manager comes screaming out of the dugout, super pissed off, like, what the fuck are you doing? And then the manager gets ejected. There's got to be a better way to not have the most split second, I didn't see you with my own eyes tap your helmet, so therefore you don't get a review.
I love the fact that the review has to be instant, no wait, like they do, if it's a call at second base and they hold up their hand, they say, wait, okay, never mind. I do like the fact of the pace and the inevitable. You have to do it immediately. But let's face it, what you just said is it's really hard for that home plate umpire to see what's right in front of him. Is that hard?
Well,
just stop looking away. You can't miss the catcher and the pitcher, the catcher and the batter. They're right. A foot in front of you. How hard is that?
Well, you say you like how the tempo, the pace of it is. It's right away. I agree in theory, but here's how quick the right away has become. Guys are tapping their helmets in between the pause, between the ball hitting the mitt and the umpire. Some of these guys have a more leisurely turn and then for a strike.
I've seen that.
And so the challenge comes because the catcher's like, well, what is it, a ball or a strike, in a fraction of a second? And then all mayhem breaks loose from there. There was also a funny call in the Toronto-Boston game the other night in which the scoreboard had the wrong number of outs. And so with one out and two on, fly ball to center, the two Boston runners thought there were two outs, so they left on contact. They make the catch. They throw back to the infield. They go for a force play at first, which was the trail runner. But you can't force a a runner backwards. You can only force them forwards. And so therefore they had to appeal the third base runner leaving early and then tag out at third or throw it to third. And it was a big snafu.
Like it was because it was really a smidge more than that in the sense that they,
I think I got it right. I might've missed a key element.
No, you got it right. It's just that the thing is in any situation, forget about the scoreboard being wrong. In any situation like that, they throw to first for the third out. Now Toronto wants to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Cause the guy had already scored. Now, right. He scored illegally because he hadn't tagged, but nonetheless, without an appeal, the run has scored. So that's a rare thing in baseball they call the fourth out rule, where you can still appeal it and go and say, no, we don't want the third out at first. We want the third out by appealing at third. But because the umps were really slow to award the run after they went through it between innings and they said, okay, because the outs were wrong,
right,
the run scores. And then Toronto's like, well, we want to appeal it. But the rule is once you leave the field, you can't appeal it. And they're like, well, if you called it right in the first place, we wouldn't have left the field. I know. So it's that's like, why it was so goofy. Yeah.
That is funny. Yeah. You have to actually appeal and then claim the fourth out, not the third out.
Correct. Yep.
It's so wild. Well, you know, baseball gets long at this time of the year, and you've been doing it since fucking March. So shit's going to happen. I just love the fact that on that play, the stadium scoreboard changed the number of outs as the ball was in the air. Someone was like, oh, shit, wait a minute, wrong number of outs.
Well, you know, you talk about how, gee, it's so hard for the outfielders and everybody to keep their head in the game and track the outs. Well, how about the intern out there with the lights? You know, he's going to daydream. I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often.
There's apparently a guy at every stadium called the BOSS, B-O-S-S. Yeah. It's an acronym for balls, outs, strikes, situation. That his job is to monitor closely and be in charge of all of the signage and all the scoreboard stuff to make sure the balls, the outs, the strikes, and the situation is correct. Yep. But again, it happens. Shit happens.
And that's he's assistant manager trainee, and he's going to someday be a general manager, or so he thinks.
Right. What did you think of the Tarik Skubal trade?
Knew it was coming. There was one reason we bet the Tigers under this year. There was no way he was going to finish this year. Of course, they played better lately without him, so that's not done. I will say this. It's not like a bad fantasy league where you say, oh, geez, why didn't you give me a chance? I guarantee, without knowing this, I guarantee they shopped him. You don't trade Skubal without shopping. You get the best deal you can. And then when everybody else says, oh, you got nothing to say. It's not like they called up the Dodgers and took the deal. They shopped him everywhere. They got what they could. There's no reason for them to have kept him. I hated to see him go to the Dodgers, but I wrote at the break, take the Tigers under in the second half because Skubal's going to be a Dodger. I mean, how hard was it to see that? Their farm system's so loaded. They didn't pay a lot, but they paid more than anybody else would. And at the end of the day, you know, the baseball deadline coming at the end of July, there's usually almost a third of the season left. There's a lot, you know, Skubal's making, what, $32 million a year. People forget that at the deadline, when the contract shifts, I know they're rich, but if you told me I could let Skubal walk in October, we're not going to make the playoffs, or I can save $10 million tomorrow, it's hard to not save that money.
I know. It's even hard. For the richest owners. And by the way, the Ilitch family, I saw a list. They're like the fourth richest ownership group in Major League Baseball. And Detroit may be a city on the industrial decline, but it's still a major city, and they've got very rich baseball tradition, so they really shouldn't have been sellers. I read the long Jeff Passan article about how the trade went down, and I mean, it was like 3,000 words. And for me, Mr. X, reading a 3,000-word baseball story, that's a grind, okay? So I was committed to trying to, like, get to the bottom of it, and it didn't really resonate with me because the way Passan was spinning it, and some call him a Dodgers apologist, he was saying, look, the Tigers entered the year. They didn't want to do this. They wanted to keep Skubal, but then they had a shitty May, and had sunk their season. And even though since May, they've been one of the best teams in baseball, May happened, and that's that. So then they went about deciding we've got to move them. And there was all kinds of other parameters and this and that. I just think it's very simple that Scuba, like a lot of these guys, want to go play for a winner. They want the champagne shower and a ring, and they want all the money they can get. And there's one great place to do that. That's the Dodgers. So, of course, they're going to tell their agent, in this case, Scott Boras, send me to L.A. And, of course, a team like the Tigers is not going to want to get on the wrong side of Boras by sending him to the Tampa Bay Rays. And on top of that, the Rays and the Brewers are going to be very hesitant to go get him because they're like,
yeah, they wouldn't have taken him just for the $10 million.
Well, yeah. And also they're like, how committed to this are you? Are you going to wake up with the first little twitch in your left pinky and say, I need to go on the DL? They wouldn't trust him. That what CC Sabathia did for the Brewers is truly amazing. They got him as a rental for a month, and he fucking shoved for a month for them with no reservation going into free agency, possibly ruining his arm. He did it anyway. That will never happen again. Yeah. So the school
that's true. And whenever you let your franchise guys play out the option and the fans are happy and then they leave, you sit around like the Nationals going, maybe we should have got something for Scherzer. Maybe we should have got something for Bryce Harper. You miss a chance to totally rebuild a franchise.
Yeah.
It's hard not to. And this is the thing baseball ownership or management, rather, will never be able to say out loud. There are so many times that you look at the season in July and you look at the standings and you're three back and you say, how much is it worth us to try to get that sixth seed and lose in round one?
Right.
Is it really a big deal?
Yeah.
It's not.
It's a lot of money for just a marginally better chance of winning.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to ask. Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good, maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at MyBookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
All right, I got to give you this story if you didn't see it already. Did you hear about the utterly disastrous team bonding golf outing that Mike Trout and the Angels had?
Only the Angels. Okay.
So, first of all, on the Mike Trout front, this was one of the original knockdown dragouts with you and my boy Jay, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No. And my feeling on Trout is, okay, you're agreed to be one of the great modern players of all time. Why don't you give a shit about winning? Like, what is it, bro?
It is odd.
It's hard for me to, like, really sing your praises. And by the way, if you look at his numbers the last couple of years, he hadn't blown anyone's skirt up in terms of producing. So there's that. But Trout loves golf, and he has built this insane golf course called Trout National in New Jersey, where he's from. Apparently, $100 million budget for this golf course. That's a lot. Usually a nice golf course, $12, $15 million. This thing is off the charts nice. Okay. So he took a bunch of his Angel teammates on a golf outing last week before the trade deadline. Guess what happened? Like, four of them got traded mid-round. Oh, yes. According to Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic, three of the 12 players there were traded mid-outing. And just for good measure, reliever Kirby Yates found out he was sent to the Pirates in the car right after leaving the course. That's a full foursome ending up on different teams by day's end.
How about you? Yeah, at the turn, you say, okay, we're going to redraw the teams. Everybody still on the Angels is on this team. Everybody no longer on the Angels. You're on the other team.
Yes. Another Angel, right-hander Jose Soriano, doesn't play golf, so he was back at the team's hotel. He got traded as well. Suter, the first player to get traded on the course, an 11-year veteran, got the call on the practice putting green right before teeing off. His first question was, can I finish the round? He said, I started hugging everybody. Luckily, I was able to play the round and enjoy the last couple hours with the guys before I caught the last flight out of Philly to Atlanta.
I was playing so well. Can I finish?
Soon after, Adele found out his fate on the 11th hole. He said, at least I got to play half the course. That's the positive. Zefiron was dealt between numbers 12 and 13 during a rain.
I can't make that up. You know, during a baseball game, like on that last Sunday, you'll see a guy pulled in the third inning. You're like, okay, he's going to get traded. What are they pulling him on the fourth hole?
Apparently they were. Apparently this golf outing was like the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. It was that bad. All right, let's.
That's a really bad team. It's a really bad team. And why is whenever guys want to be traded and force their way out, we kind of knock them. And in Trout's case, it's just such the opposite of like, why has he never wanted out?
It's crazy to me. He's just happy making a shit ton of money and raking when he's healthy. One more thing about the Angels, they fired their whole pitching staff, including Mike Maddux. And the word is they weren't using the modern analytics and technology available for pitching coaches and pitching staffs. You know, this is the thing. If you're not going to adapt, they're going to run you out in baseball. Like, you can't hold on to your old mystic ways forever.
That's fair. There's an unwritten thing there I talk to the boys about all the time. Whenever it's, why did this coach get fired or why did that guy get fired? And in your industry, you know this better than anybody. And I always tell them the answer is everybody has a boss. Everybody has a boss. And if your boss hates you, let's not talk about performance and measure. If you're the coach and you don't get along with the GM, it's the ice gets thin.
Yeah.
And, it's not as simple as the fans looking at you. You got to get along with your staff. But the Angels, I mean, they have nothing anyway. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. So real quick on your MLB season bets. Your best bet has gone 21-5 the past 26 years. This year's bet is Rockies over 54.5. Currently at 47-73, you only need to go 8-34 to win. I don't want to jinx it, but I like
you. Just chances. Did
I just,
you just did?
I don't want to. I like your chances to win.
I like the chances. The only hard part about winning eight games is it is still the Rockies.
Yeah.
But I think we'll get there.
This year, your best will probably go 2-2, you'd tell me. All picks will likely be 7-3. So,
Yeah.
Still going to be a pretty good year. Football season's coming up. We're excited for that. Any quick thoughts on the NFL as the camps have started up? First round of playoff games begin tonight, Thursday night. Other than the Hall of Fame game, which was last Sunday.
I will admit I'm now gearing up hard for football, but I have not paid great attention to the offseason other than, like, I love the fact that the Commanders evidently had to decide between Ayuk and Diggs. Okay.
That's a good one.
Ayuk was maybe one of the few guys that made Diggs look really, really attractive. He had a great year in New England last year. He was unknown. Went under the radar. He really did still perform.
Yeah, not unknown.
But I know he's got his off-field issues, but...
Oh, he's fucking...
Who doesn't?
The off-field issues, look, I mean, when you have a man accusing you of sexual assault, I mean, it could well be bullshit. A lot of these charges are. It's just a bad look on top of all the other stuff.
Nobody in the locker room will give him a hard time about that.
Yeah, well, he had like 85 catches for 7 touchdowns last year for the Patriots, which was good with Drake May. And I don't know, if he gets 45-4 as a member of the Commanders and he stays out of trouble, you know what? It's fine. It's a small win right there. By the way,
I wish I could have sat in the room and listened to them talk about a Euchre Diggs.
Yes, exactly. All right. So by the way, the Hall of Fame game was Thursday, not Sunday. My apologies. Okay. So here we are on the verge of the new 3-game preseason schedule. Yeah. And it looks like some of the starters are going to actually play on Thursday for some of the teams. Wonder what your thoughts are on would you as a coach even play anyone of significance in August?
That's a good question. Yeah, it used to be you started slow and you ramped up at the end of preseason, and the last preseason game, which was game 6 back in my day, was kind of a trial run. Now I think it's with only 3, they do it the opposite. They'd rather play them early and sit them late. So it's not like, oh, they're playing them already. This is kind of it.
Yeah.
You don't see them in the last game. So they've kind of flipped the order, I think, if that makes sense.
I think
so. If they're not going to play in 3, you got to get out there in 1 or you're not doing anything.
I think that's the case. I think now most teams are saying, we're going to give you a shot of, let's call it a quarter, maybe a half, but probably not. And then we're going to shut you down. And there's no science to that, by the way. There's zero. It's all superstition. It's all to protect coaches from being questioned if the team starts out slow once the season begins. Why didn't you play anybody in the preseason? They can at least go, well, yeah, we did back on August 15th when they played 1 quarter. And you don't want to play 2 quarters because then if a guy gets hurt, the media goes, what are you, an idiot? Why are you playing them more than a quarter? You know,
it's all hindsight. You start slow in September and they say it's because you didn't get reps in August. You get hurt. They say, why did you? The end justifies the means. They just look backwards. You're right. There's no real formula, obviously. I think there's no way to avoid criticism. Whatever you do, it just better work.
Yeah. College football. It's funny because people are now coming to grips with the fact that it's impossible to know really who's any good. And the preseason rankings are such a joke because there is so much player movement and especially key players. I mean, quarterbacks are moving left and right all the time. And so there's no way. And for people to say, oh, we shouldn't even have preseason rankings, it's impossible to know. I'm like, these are marketing tools. They're just a guess. Sure. It doesn't really matter. It'll sort itself out by week 7 or week 8. It's just so there can be a little number next to the matchups on the TV placard that says, hey, number 2 Michigan versus number 7 LSU or whatever the matchup is. It's marketing. Sure. That's all.
Well, when you're the borderline teams, let's call them like, you know, the teams that are 15 to 40 or whatever, it gives them a little bit of a, hey, we're not that terrible this year. UVA, we're ranked 24th. Hey, maybe we don't stink. I mean, that's all it does. And when you do the you know, this Saturday's ESPN game, you can't say it's 2 teams, but we don't really know the rankings yet. You have to say it's number 2 versus 7, or who's going to watch?
Yeah, right, right.
So I wouldn't worry about. I love my offseason note for NCAA, and I'm sure you've seen and talked about it. Is Akron?
Yes. Akron
is the Zabin special.
One of the great all-time promotions in which they're going to let somebody help design their opening drive as a play
season ticket holder. Can
but you must be a season ticket holder. Yeah. Well, sort of call plays. You can help design the first drive and the first drive only.
Oh yeah. That's why I called it the Zabin special, since you can call plays. But as soon as that came out, the group chat X4 said, I'm calling 3 kneels and a 90-yard field goal.
My answer was, look, I could be an average play caller with a year of tutelage just because any given play on any given down has about a 50-50 shot of working.
And hey, if it's in the playbook, it's not my fault. What's it doing in there if it's no good?
And somebody said, oh, are you kidding me? Do you really think a fullback dive on 3rd and 17 has a 50-50 shot of working? And I wasn't clear enough to say that any reasonable play call based on down and distance. So, in other words, you're not running fullback dive on 3rd and 17.
No, but you're not flipping coins.
Right. But any reasonable play call on any given down and distance has about a 50-50 shot of working because the other team is trying to call a play to match or a defense to match what they think you're going to call. And sometimes if you're a wild and newbie play caller that's calling some stuff, you're like, I didn't think that'd happen.
Yeah.
That your well-thought-out defensive formation for what you expected might be the exact wrong thing.
Hey, none of those D coordinators have a book on Zabin.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Third and nine, and they come out with a 5-DB nickel package. And I come out in jumbo three tight end. And I run, you know, a quick, you know, smash toss left side. Who's to say it can't go for 9 yards against a light front box? Like, you just don't know. Anyway.
Right. Well, on the college note, though, I think we can always say it's hard to predict, and of course it is. I mean, obviously the trust just goes in the institution spending 25 times more than the others, Ohio State's and Oregon's and everybody. But I think, you know, when we're working through our season totals for college, and what I find an interesting, more difficult wrinkle is, you know, now. It used to be you had, you know, okay, the senior graduated and the sophomore running back is now going to start. Now, everybody is coming from another school. And when the major schools are recruiting out of the MAC, and you say, okay, this guy was passed over and he had to go to the MAC. Did everyone mess up and now he's a good player, like the dude for Vanderbilt last year, whatever those guys. What's the quarterback's name for
Vandy? Diego Pavia.
Pavia. You know, you always have this guy that was passed over and he had to go play in a little bitty school. And look, he's good. Or maybe he belongs in the MAC.
Well, yeah.
You don't know yet.
We don't know yet. But I know this. It's easy to, quote, miss on high school kids because there's so many of them. And they're still developing physically and emotionally. And so there is a miss rate, and there is also just sort of a inefficiency in how the bigger schools go after certain players, and they're going to miss two or three guys in the MAC or lesser schools. What happens now is that those better players at the second tier of college football, they show out right away. And to any coach or any program, they can go, ooh, that guy's fucking good. And then they swoop in, pay him some money, and tell Bowling Green, yoink, thanks for the linebacker, suckers.
Yeah. It's the rosters are so overhauled that trying to predict the season and the totals, on the one hand, it's more impossible. And on the other hand, maybe there's more nuggets out there and just got more work to do, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm still going to watch it. Because you know what? I don't have to predict the whole season. I just have to fucking bet it. That's all. Week by week. Figure it out week by week. So let's go over the plan for this year on the podcast, which you joke is usually concrete for at least 2 or 3 weeks, and then it starts getting loose. We'll make it concrete this year. We are going to record Wednesdays for a Thursday release, which will encompass the Thursday NFL game, as well as, you know, college is on Thursday too, so we have that going for us, which is nice. And then, you know, you'll give your thoughts on the week ahead, because obviously if you're really betting actual money of any significance on NFL games, you should not be putting that money down until Sunday morning, when you got the best view of who's available, what the weather is going to be, and everything else. So we can't, you know, we can't really in good conscience say here is our best four picks, you and I, for the week, but we'll at least get Thursday out of the way, and we'll talk about all the stuff that happened the prior week when it comes to our gambling perspective.
That sounds like a plan right there.
Now, the other
last year we announced the plan, and I have one of your guys emailed me and said this plan will never make it to week three.
Oh, fuck that guy. And for those that want to subscribe for more at callmemrx.com, you do have an announcement regarding next year, which is you're angling for this to be your last dance like Aaron Rodgers. So that could affect some people in terms of what they normally do, which is sign up for football that wraps over into baseball.
Yeah, I think this is the last dance. And in order, because, you know, things change, you know, But if since some people sign up a season by season, and of course I offer a break when you do the whole 12 months of everything. So I'm trying to plan ahead, and I'm not allowing a full year. I'm allowing football only, because then I have the door open come February to say it's time to stop. I'm getting too old for this stuff.
Yeah. Age comes for everyone, unfortunately. You said your mentor, Dano, is now in hospice care. How much older is Dano than you?
Lots. Yeah, he's 83 or 4.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But so, still, it's always this it's a rough thing.
The your older mentor who taught you the ninja-like ways of wagering, including giving you the slogan of "This is a rubber band game."
That is correct. He invented the rubber band game. And we only have a couple of those a year.
The rubber band game, for those that don't know, means what?
That's when he used to say a rubber band game meant go to the top drawer of your dresser, get out the wad of cash, and take the rubber band off of it.
The biggest wad you have with the thickest rubber band, take it off and let it ride. So
yeah, we don't have those often, but when they do, that's what we call them. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just want to hit a couple Rover and overs this September.
Oh, that's all my listeners. Bankrolls the season.
They love hitting the Rover and over. It's always a fun time.
Okay. It's I swear it's the only time in ever when the odds are with you.
Boat one, don't tell mom, is in the water and floating just fine. Boat number two has been almost fully rehabbed and will be sold at a profit, claims Mr. X.
It has really turned out well. Everybody is shocked, mostly Mrs. X, who was, strangely enough, was never in support of this and has made it clear there will not be a boat three. But you know what? She's been wrong before.
Well, maybe if there was a TV show on cable called Boat Rehab, that they could feature you on it as somebody who fixed up a boat and then sold it. But all right.
I'm going to think there's better candidates out there than me.
All right. Well, Mr. X, good to hear you're in fine fiddle. Football is a-coming, and we look forward to chatting with you every week. You'll hear it on Thursdays, but we'll record on Wednesdays, and we'll just see how the chips fall.
Sounds good. Oh, are we going to do Circa?
You know, I talked to my boy Oster out there, and he invited us out to their Radio Row, which is the last weekend of August, and I'm still on the
fence
about it. I wouldn't mind going out there. Circa Millions, for those that don't know, is an incredible contest where you pick four games a week, I believe.
Used to be five. I don't know what it is now. It used to be five.
Let's call it five games a week. You have to pay for a person who is out there to physically enter your picks. So there is no shenanigans with entries emailed, texted in from strange places. So that's a service that costs several hundred dollars for the year. The entry is $1,000, but I believe the first prize for the contest is north of $7 million. And I believe their sister contest called Circa Survivor is even higher. And to be in a survivor pool with a lot of people that have paid $1,000 per entry, God, that would be so much fun. Like, and we had talked about maybe we sell shares to listeners of this $1,000 entry. So it's the Zabecast entry. You have a $100 share. And if we win, you get a, you know, commensurate piece of the winnings. To me, like, we're all in it together. Charge and I talked about how if we had 10 investors and every week we sent out an email going, okay, who do you want? We go with the consensus pick of who we want, and we live or die, we ride or die with each other. Could be fun. Now, could be
the survivors.
Could be a 3-week flushing of a grand.
Over under is 2.5. But those are fun. But to me, those things have gotten so large that it's just.
Are you saying there's too many sharps?
Too many numbers. You know, so no matter how sharp or unsharp somebody is, when you have a bazillion of them in it,
you have to be
somebody's right. You have to be so perfect. I prefer the format of pick the point spreads five games because you're not, you are what you are. You are what your record says you are.
True.
Quote Parcells. And I think we could do that. The Survivor one, just to me, those don't interest me as much. But, you know, if we won that $7 million or something, we'd have to pay tax.
Yeah, you're right. There'd probably be some paperwork we'd have to go through as well.
Is it on my return? Is it on yours? We got to hire somebody to figure out how to split it.
Yeah. And, you know, as a wise man once told me, only bet as much as you can afford to win. I don't know if I can afford to win $7 million.
I think I could. I think we could do that. I think
how many more shitty boats would you buy just to fucking rehab if we won that?
Yeah. You know what? If I won that, I'll tell you right now, I will retire from the boat business.
All right. I'll put it out there now. Who's interested in Circa Millions, Circa Survivor, possible 10-way trust of guys? What?
How about just you and me? We don't need those guys.
Well, for Survivor, we can do
for Survivor. For Survivor, yes.
For the Circa Millions, you and I can split the 1,000 and 500. Yeah, 500.
Picking five games a week, people would be all over the map. You can do that for a Survivor. That's what you in charge said is a format for fun. That's cool. Plus, that way you can give crap to the one guy who steered you down the wrong road.
But if you're picking the game, if you and I do the Circa Millions, you know I'm going to defer to you, that I'm going to be your junior advisor. I will say, here are the games I like, and I will hand them to you in a dossier, and then you will mull it over, and then when it's all said and done, you'll say, here's what I've picked for us, and I will say, yes, Captain.
We did that in year one on this show. Remember? And we did it in the first year.
We weren't terrible.
We were not. We didn't win anything.
No, but
we were in the hunt with 6-7 weeks to go, as I recall.
I think
enough to screw up down the stretch.
I think we were in the high 50% range.
Oh gosh, better than that.
We were above 60?
No. Oh yeah. Okay. We had a good start, enough to get the interest going. And after a few weeks, maybe 6-8 weeks into it, my recollection is I was hot and you were like, I don't want to pick anymore. You pick. I don't like this.
I can't handle this. You
and then I blew it down the stretch and we probably came in the top 200, I think.
Yeah. Fuck it. We should do it. We should do it. Cause you know what?
The hard part is you have to have boots on the ground to make the original entry. Cause they want people to come. You can't just do it online. They don't want that. Yeah. They want boots on the ground and gambling in the casino. And I can't go out there this time of year. So,
well, I mean, I know. Well, I would be out there as the initial guy to put the $1,000 down, but then we hire a proxy to get the picks in. And it's just part of the overhead cost. So anyway, well,
like a plan.
Sort it out. Okay, Mr. X. Good to talk as always. Right. We'll talk soon. Thank you, my friend.
All right, thanks. Take care.
The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.